Hello there, football fans. Welcome to Thursday, November the 5th, Soccer Central podcast. I'm James Sharman, joined by John Molinaro. Jamie, do you know what today is in where I'm part, where I'm from, in England? Special day.
Oh, it's
day.
That day where you burn stuff.
That's right, it is.
I forget what it's called, though.
It's called Bonfire Night, Guy Fawkes Night, Fireworks Night.
Right.
It's basically to honour a wonderful time in English history where this guy, Guy Fawkes, tried and failed to blow up Parliament.
So that's what it's in celebration?
That's how we roll.
Wow.
That's how we roll over there. Yeah.
Look at you guys.
He actually he got caught, and they tortured him. They racked him, got a confession out of him. And there's still to this day, many people say, well, listen, we're not sure he was actually responsible for the gunpowder plot.
Okay.
But he was tortured enough to admit anything. And then they killed him.
Wow.
It's nice. It's a nice story.
And so is this a full day thing where you guys burn stuff, or is it just...
Like many of the evenings, it's fireworks and fires, and you burn the guy in effigy.
In effigy, right.
Yeah. Now, I've heard reports already today that Sepp Blatter's been burned in effigy a few times around the country,
surprising.
Which is brilliant. Hilarious.
Now, is this all across the country?
Yep.
Or just... Oh,
yep.
Wow.
All across England, yeah.
Wow, look at you guys.
It's fun. It's a fun night.
Yeah, burning stuff.
Yeah.
Sounds like a good time.
I might burn some stuff tonight myself.
There you go.
Burn the house down or something.
Yes.
To honor that wonderful occasion.
Yes, exactly.
Well, listen, it's a very, very busy week football-wise. We'll get to the Champions League story later in today's show. We'll also talk some Vancouver Whitecaps. Big game for them on Sunday, of course, against Portland. Paul Dolan will join us, but as big a game as that is, just as big as Montreal's game against Colombia, up 2-1.
Columbus.
Thank you.
Colombia, wouldn't that be a game?
Yeah, wouldn't it? I would have some money on Colombia with respect to the impact.
Right.
Up 2-1 on Columbus. We're joined now by Stu Cowan of the Montreal Gazette. Stu, how you doing, mate?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, thanks. Good. I want to talk quickly about the column you wrote this past week about the languages and the whole cultural makeup of the impact. I think 11 different languages are spoken in that squad.
It's at least 5, Captain Patrice Bernier said. That's a minimum. And I know when during halftime of the playoff game against Toronto, when Coach Mauro Biello sort of peeled the paint off the walls with his speech, he couldn't even remember how many languages he spoke. He said he knew he spoke English, French, and Italian, and he says he thinks he might have thrown in some Spanish too, but he wasn't certain. So there's quite a mix here of including of course Didier Drogba from the Ivory Coast, who's speaks French, which works out really well in Montreal. But yeah, there's quite a mix here, as there are in other teams in MLS. But when you throw in also the fact that Montreal is a French-speaking city, and goalkeeper Evan Bush spoke a little bit about that when I spoke with him last week, just saying for a lot of the American players, it's an adjustment coming here. One of the reasons they stay in MLS is because they don't need to make that cultural adjustment, and then you end up in Montreal with the French language and whatnot. So you said it's a difficult adjustment for some American players. But as I said, there's a real mix here, but they seem to have really come together well since Mauro Biello took over as coach.
That's a great point. You see often in sports teams, no matter what the sport, cliques forming, often along cultural lines. But in this squad, you just don't see that, do you, so much? It's a real tight, tight group have bonded really well, despite their various backgrounds.
They really do. I mean, when Frank Lopez was here as coach, the team was struggling a bit. And I think some of the fun, obviously Mauro Biello hasn't really said anything negative about Frank Lopez, but he has just said when he came in, the main thing he wanted to change here is just making it fun. He said when he played with the Impact, it was fun coming to practice. It was fun playing games. It was fun being around the guys. I know DJ Drogba took all the team out for dinner one night. The team's also had a few other social events they've arranged to get the players together away from the pitch. And it seems to be working. And Mauro Biello is a soft-spoken guy. And, he did lose his cool during that halftime speech. That probably even had more of an impact because of the way he normally is. He's, pretty composed regularly. But, the thing I've noticed, the practice was out there today and yesterday also. And, practice was over. And 35 minutes, 40 minutes later, there was still, half a dozen to a dozen guys still around, kicking the ball around, practicing corner kicks and just having fun. They're just like a bunch of kids.
Well, and it's an interesting point you raised to about Mauro because, obviously a lot of the attention is being focused on Didier Drogba and since he's come to MLS and it's an incredible strike record. And I don't think there's any question that he's had a major impact on Montreal and on this turnaround. But I'm not sure that Biello's getting the credit he deserves too because he's really sort of transformed this franchise just in the way he's sort of, communicated and managed the players. Wouldn't you agree?
I agree with you. I mean, Biello has been with this franchise. He played 16 years here as a player. He was telling me he remembered the days when they used to have to climb a chain link fence to get into the practice facility because the gates would be locked when they were at the old Claude Robillard Center. So he'd seen this, this franchise come from nothing really to what it's become now. And he has a real passion for it. And, he took over as coach at the same time as Drogba came on to play his first game. And, Drogba scored 11 goals in 12 games. So obviously he's had a huge impact. But I think Biello's had just as much of an impact, just as far as getting everybody on the same page. And, as a coach, when you have a superstar like that coming in, there's also, you're dealing with the egos or personalities. The one thing that's really seemed to have worked out well is Drogba has really seems to fit in as one of the boys. He took some knocks here at first because he wasn't doing too many media interviews, and he's still not doing a lot of them. But when he has spoken, or the impact has spoken about it, he sort of maintained that, especially when he first came here, he didn't want it to be all about him. Like, I just got here. I don't know anything about this team. I'm not this team. There's other guys here. And I think that might have probably gone over very well with his teammates. And, when they won the game against Toronto, and in the locker room afterwards, when the media finally got in, the African music was blaring, and he was dancing in the middle of the room with with four or five or six other guys. And when one of the PR guys turned off the music, he said, "Oh, no. So they put it back on, and he danced for another couple of minutes before they finally got him to turn it off so we could actually hear what he was saying in an interview. But he really seems to be, the team seems to have sort of bonded around him, and they're just having a good time with them. And the team, all the players seem to be having fun, and nobody seems to be having more fun than Drogba. He didn't speak with the media yesterday, but, there were reports of him possibly going to FC Bologna after the MLS playoffs. And he was sort of leaning on a fence and stretching after practice and sort of yelling, "Bologna, Bologna," to the reporters. So he's got a sense of humor. He's an international soccer superstar, as you guys know. But he seems to have really fit in well with the guys on the team here.
Just turning our attention back to Biello, do you suspect or to have an indication that whether he'll be back next year? Will he be given the job on the full-time
basis? I would certainly think so. I mean, he's still got the interim tag. Mauro Biello and Nick DeSantis, who have been GM, and I forget exactly what his title is now, it's sort of international development or something like that, and Joey Saputo, the owner, they go way back. They're close, they're a tight-knit group of three guys, and when Joey Saputo gave the job to Biello, it was sort of almost a no-win situation where the team was going and struggling, and Biello said at the time, "If I didn't take the opportunity now, it might not ever come." And I would think that nobody's happier with what's happened than Joey Saputo, because I think shortly after the season's over, I would expect to take the interim tag off. And I think that'll really make Joey Saputo happy. Here's a guy that he's known for years. He's a Montrealer. He's trilingual, but he speaks French, which just really helps with the media in this city. And, as I said, I don't think anybody's happier to see the job that he's done than Joey Saputo, not just because it's his team, but also because I think he really likes Mauro Biello and they have a long history together.
On the playing side, Stu, is it fair to say the one man that might typify what's happened in the stretch run here is Patrice Bernier? He's been around the block with this team a lot under Klopp, as he wasn't playing that much, but he's back there once again, integral in the team's success.
Yeah, well, I mean, as I mentioned, with Frank Klopas and players not having fun under him, I mean, Patrice Bernier was, he only started 6 of 34 games this year, and he was basically rarely even being used off the bench under Klopas. And there was one game where his wife was sort of frustrated, and she went on Facebook and said that it's time for the impact. If they're not going to treat him with respect, maybe it's time for him to go play elsewhere, which made a lot of headlines here. And since, Biello has, when he came in, he said he was going to use everybody, and he has. And for a guy who only started 6 games during the regular season, he started the 2 playoff games, scored a goal in each game. He hadn't scored a goal in 2 full seasons here in Montreal. So at age 36, I think he's, as mentioned again, he's having fun, enjoying playing the game, enjoying coming to practice. And, Mauro Biello has given him an opportunity, and he's ran with it. And, 36 years old, 2 goals in 2 games. I asked Biello today after practice, I said, "I guess we can assume he'll be in the starting lineup again on Sunday." Biello wouldn't confirm it, but I mean, I'd be shocked if he's not there.
Mm. What have you made of Evan Bush this season? Because for me, he's someone who, previous seasons kind of flew under the radar. I mean, I think from watching him this year, he's really kind of stepped up and made that number one position his own. I'm interested to hear your take on it.
Yeah, well, Nigel Real-Coker told me earlier in the week, or it might have been last week, he said that Bush has been their most valuable player this year, even more valuable than Drogba. He's kept them in games. Everybody talks about how calm and relaxed he is, and there's sort of in the comparison to Carey Price that he sort of has a lot of his same temperament both on the pitch and off. And they say that nobody works harder than him. I mean, he was picked up by the Impact when they were still in the North American Soccer League and was the goalkeeper of the year that year. And that was just the year before they made the move to MLS. And then when they came to MLS, all of a sudden he found himself as a third or fourth keeper on the depth chart, and he's just worked really hard since then, and he's got himself to the number one spot. He's listed, I believe, at 6'2". He looks a little bit shorter than that, but he's a real athlete. When you see him, he's one of those guys that looks like he could play any sport. I mean, he was saying he played baseball and he played basketball and was a kicker on his high school football team when he was a kid. So he's an athletic guy in nets. He's acrobatic. He's made some big saves, and I think the key thing that the Impact really likes is just he's a calming influence back there. And, he's been as important to this team's success as anybody.
Stu, when I was covering the TFC playoff game in Montreal, I was really sort of blown away. Maybe not blown away, but just really sort of impressed me how much that the city seemed to have gotten around the Impact. There was a lot of buzz in the city. I've noticed in the last couple of weeks, the Montreal Gazette has really ramped up its coverage of the Impact. Can this be sustained? I mean, what do they have to do to sort of maintain this interest? Is this all just being successful? Does Drogba have to stay there? How do they sustain this?
Drogba's here next year. He signed for next year also. I think it's important in this city to have a star. So when Drogba eventually leaves, I think they need to bring somebody else. I had Marco Davao here before they brought in Drogba. I said Drogba fits in perfectly in the city. He's almost like the soccer version of Pique Subban, except he speaks French also. He's got that flamboyance. He's a great player. People just seem to the star that shines and people are really attracted to it. It's sort of like a perfect storm for the Impact also, because the Alouettes, after making the playoffs, it was 19 years in a row, have failed to make the playoffs this year. And, the Canadians are the Canadians in this city. Nobody's going to compete with them. But I think for the secondary sports market here, I think the Impact has moved ahead of the Alouettes. They built that Saputo Stadium. It's a beautiful little stadium. There's not a bad seat in the place. I mean, it would be a lot better if it was located closer to downtown. It's right up beside the Olympic Stadium. But it's a real fun place to go. And, as I mentioned in the column I wrote this morning, just walking up to the game the other night, just the different languages you hear being spoken by fans, outside the ticket offices and whatnot. And it's a real reflection of what the city of Montreal is. It's a multi-ethnic city. And I think the Impact really does reflect the city well. And I think maybe a lot of people who aren't soccer fans, if you go out to Saputo Stadium once, I think the odds are that you will go back, because it is a fun atmosphere. You have the ultra fans behind the Impact net, who I think they work up more of a sweat than the players. They never stop jumping up and down and singing and dancing through the whole game, singing Allez Montréal, or the other one is DJ Drogba, tra-la-la-la-la. They'll sing that during the game. And it's a fun place to be. And it's always more fun when the team's winning and the Impact's winning now. So I think if they can, if they can win Sunday and get to the Eastern Conference Final, I think that'll be even more of a boost to the city. And as I said, the timing is good. The Alouettes play their final game this Sunday. They're not going to be in the playoffs. So after the Canadiens, they're going to be the only other game in town. And I think that's really going to help them, not just only this season, but also moving forward.
Looking ahead to the game on Sunday, I was impressed with how they sort of shut down Kai Kamara last in the first leg. They were really well organized defensively. I can't imagine that they're going to differ drastically in terms of tactics, that they'll go about it the same way.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. That's why I think Bernier will be back in. And they also shut out Giovinco when Toronto was here. He didn't score. He had a couple opportunities, but they kept him off the score sheet. So, yeah, I would be surprised to see changes. The one thing is, Rio Coker wasn't at practice today or yesterday. He picked up a flu bug from his daughter. Biello said that today he had been at the facility yesterday. The doctors gave him some antibiotics, I guess, and told him to go home. They don't want him near the players to spread it around. I mean, anybody who has kids knows what it's like when the kids bring home the flu from school. But he said he expects him to play. Drogba also had a therapy day today. He didn't practice, but Biello said everything's fine with him. It was just sort of maybe some bumps and bruises from the other game that he's dealing with. But Drogba will definitely be ready for Sunday. And Rio Coker, they expect him to be ready. He's got another couple of days to get over that flu.
It's been a fun ride, that's for sure, and it's not done yet. People are still hoping and praying we'll see a Vancouver-Montreal final, just to upset MLS in the hierarchy there. It'd be incredible, wouldn't it? I'd really enjoy that. Stu, thank you so much. Enjoy the game, and we'll chat soon, hopefully.
Hey, my pleasure.
That's Stu Cowan of the Montreal Gazette. You can follow Stu on Twitter, at StuCowan1. A great follow for all things Montreal sports. And yeah, it's going to be another tight one, isn't it? But defensively, I still don't really buy into Columbus. I know they're playing better with Saro and Marcus these days at the back there, but 53 goals against in the regular season.
No, they were bad.
There's going to be chances.
Yeah, especially against a player, the caliber of Drogba and the form that he's in. Yeah. I think I'd be very surprised if they're able to keep a clean sheet on Sunday. That's why I'd have to think that Montreal has the advantage. And if Columbus is going to beat him, it's going to be the TFC approach. They're just going to have to simply outscore them.
Yeah, well, they've got the guns to do that, I suppose. Kai Kamara in particular, who's mentioned very quiet last time out. Speaking of TFC, before we get to Vancouver, you hosted a live chat on sportsnet.ca today. Some great questions, by the way.
Yeah.
One I found interesting, and that's looking at the DPs going forward, and obviously Giovinco, Bradley, and Altidore. You don't think any of them are leaving?
No. Right?
Giovinco obviously staying.
Right.
Bradley makes a lot of money. But you also think that Giovinco should play up top by himself with Jose playing out wide, which in fairness doesn't really play to Jose's strengths. If this team's got to reinvest, right?
Right.
And they've got to get some defensive help and help in the midfield, would you not look at moving a Jose Altidore?
It's an interesting question. I mean, I should say that I said either play him out on the wing, but I also, and then later on in the chat, I also said play him just sort of behind Seba. I think you have to play Seba up through the middle at the top. I think that's just how he's most effective. I know he's played in the wing, both in Toronto and previously in Italy, but I think he's at his most dangerous and most dynamic, as we've seen this year, when he's playing up top. Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, what they do with Altidore, because it's pretty clear they'd never, I don't think Greg Vanney knew quite how to get the most out of him.
Mm-hmm.
He was kind of floating in and out of the starting lineup. I mean, a lot of that was due to injuries and suspensions and international absences. I'm really interested to see how he deploys him. I don't think they move him. I think they have too much invested in him. I still think he's a quality player. And I think, whatever he had, was it 12 goals or something like
13,
that?
13, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a bad haul.
No.
It's not a bad haul.
You know, if you compare the first half of the season to the second half, that's the issue. And it's, what are they doing with this team? Are they going to be a 4-3-3 team?
Yeah.
Or a 4-2-3-1 team? Either one doesn't really fit into Altidore if you're playing Giovinco up top.
Right.
4-4-2 would if you're playing him off Giovinco.
Right.
They have to do something with defense. We know that. And midfield, right? It's a real, real issue. Right. And to do that, you got to spend money, right? And they are hard against the cap right now. So what do you do? Well, there's $4.75 million you could move off the books. Or, well, $360 million, whatever it is, the DP. But you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, no, I know what you mean.
I don't know. Just a thought, that's all.
It's an interesting one, James. I really can't see them moving him. As I said, I think they just have too much invested in him. I still think he's a quality player and he can help out. You're quite right, though. They have to figure out tactically where they're going because they were all over the place this year.
You mentioned they might buy out Kantari.
Yeah.
Does that affect the cap on buyouts in MLS?
Well, it frees up the space.
Completely.
Yeah.
So there's no, right. I'm not sure what term he was signed to, but like NHL,
he was
example, if you buy a player out, you have to.
He was essentially, I mean, I can't remember the exact amount, but he was essentially a fourth DP. He was right up there.
Yeah. It's good money. Like, three and change, right?
Yeah. So, and per key too, but Kantari I think was the higher number. So yeah, if they can get rid of him and you're allowed to buy out one sort of player per year, if they could only buy out one player, I'd have to think he'd be the one.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see.
We'll chat some Vancouver with Paul Dolan in a few minutes time. Before then, JMO, let's talk some Champions League from this past week. Some big results for certain teams. Chelsea getting the win, of course, beating Kiev 2-1. Willian with the free kick winner, and that I guess takes away the vultures who have been circling Jose Mourinho the last little
while. For the time being.
They played pretty well in that game, though, I thought. And yeah, they did concede the goal at 1-0 to make it 1-1. But you're seeing flashes, I think, of Chelsea finding their feet.
You are, James. But you know what? They weren't. I mean, I think they were, carried the play in that game. But like, if this were the Chelsea of old, they would have brushed aside Dinamo Kiev pretty easily. And even when they went up 1-0, you didn't get a sense that Chelsea was going to roll over them or that Kiev was playing, out of fear. In fact, they looked, pretty confident. And, they put pressure in under Begovic, and he made that howler of a mistake that led to the goal. So I don't think this is the same Chelsea team. I don't think teams fear them anymore. And I think we saw that. And they were, I would agree that they carried play, but they weren't all that dominant. And, I think the 2-1, it could have easily been a 1-1 draw.
It will be nice to see, though, a big club, and I wrote about this in the 5 questions on the site coming up, I think, on Friday. You'll post it. How it would be nice to see a big club allow a big-name coach or any coach face adversity and fix it and come through the other side before, pulling the trigger too soon. And I want to see Jose Mourinho in January in the transfer window and next summer and fix this thing, because he needs to fix it in the market. You know, yeah. I'm not sure who's there can do it right now. John Terry has to move out eventually, right?
Right.
They tried for John Stone so hard in the offseason. They'll do it again next summer, I'm sure. He knows where the problems are. And I think, you know, he has the means about him to fix it.
Right.
Or do you think they should fire him?
Well, I mean, it's an interesting one. I mean, I'm like you. I'd like to see how he addresses this, because we haven't seen Jose Mourinho sort of face adversity like this. I mean, probably the last time when he was at Porto, right? Earlier in his career, because he was never really kind of facing this kind of situation.
No, Chelsea, when he left the first time, he had a slow start against Rosenberg.
Nothing like this. Not even close. Yep. So I'm really interested to see, because I think this will show us another side of Mourinho and how he can sort of address things and handle things when things aren't going so well.
Real Madrid beat PSG 1-0. What do you make of this Karim Benzema story? He's being charged as part of this extortion racket against his French teammate Mathieu Valbuena, a sex scandal essentially. There's, I don't know, video, pictures, something around it, and they're trying to blackmail Valbuena. And he is now caught up in it as being like an intermediary, apparently, between the two parties. If this is true, what does it mean for his career? Let alone, I mean, he could face 5 years in jail.
Yeah.
Right? And this guy has got some form.
Him and absolutely Frank Ribery
has some major legal concerns prior to the 2010 World Cup.
World Cup, right?
A prostitution racket.
Yeah, him and Ribery.
Ribery, yeah. And they're both, I think, in the end, they got off
on
those charges. But the guy's got some history here.
Yeah. And you know, you ask the question, what does it mean for him? What does it mean for Real Madrid? What does it mean for France? They're hosting Euro next year. I know that the French roster came out this week as they're playing a pair of friendlies. Are they playing England too?
They are playing England. Yeah, England and Germany, actually.
Right. So, and not so surprising, Valbuena and Benzema not listed on the roster.
Feel bad for Valbuena.
Unless he asked
for it off to keep out the spotlight. But, I mean, he's done nothing wrong. As far as we know.
It's a weird one, James. I mean, and God, like, aren't the tabloids loving this one?
Football.
Yeah.
My God.
Bloody
football.
Hell.
Wow. Yeah, exactly. Man City beat Sevilla 3-1. Raheem Sterling really good again. And I know I thought he would be a superstar. I questioned whether this move was too soon for him. And we can talk about perhaps, you know, Anfield being the better place for him at this point in his career. But he's taken that ball and running with it, isn't he? He's playing so, so well. And he was outstanding in that.
Yeah, he's fitting in. And, you know, fitting in big games against Sevilla, right? Where, you know, they ended up clinching. And you know, who would have thought that they would have clinched with two games to spare, especially after their opening a game against Juventus where they were up 1-0 and then conceded two goals in the second half, and we were all saying, wow, same old Manchester City, can't get it done against top teams. So, you know, good for them and good for Sterling.
Bayern Munich 5, Arsenal 1.
Wow.
There's a little reply to the previous shocking result, isn't it?
What a performance. I mean, they're a fun team to watch.
There's no one better in world football. They're better than Barcelona these days.
Oh, I absolutely agree. They're so bloody entertaining to watch. I mean, this was a masterclass display. I mean, this was boys against men. This was, you know, this was like two teams at totally different levels. They're just another class. They were fantastic to watch.
Is David Alaba the third best player in world football right now?
Well, I mean, you know, you kid about it, but I don't think
he's up there.
I think he's up there as one of the best, not just defenders, but players in the world. I think
he plays everywhere. He plays left, right, centrally, midfield, back. Yeah, he could play straight. He could play goal, I'm pretty sure.
David Alaba could
do a great job at it. He's incredible.
Yeah.
And the most underrated player, I think, in world football right now.
He's one of them, no question about it. He kind of reminds me of Philipp Lahm in that way. And that would be Lahm for the longest time. Yeah. Again, another versatile player who could play a number of positions. Was never really sort of in those talks for Ballon d'Or or the top player in the world. I'm not sure Alaba is among the top, like the very elite, but he's
still young too, though.
He's still young, and I do think he's an excellent footballer. Absolutely.
You make it your boys, the Gunners, in their Champions League endeavors this year. Done, pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I think they're just gonna write this campaign off. I don't think they're gonna.
Was it always about the Premier League this year for them?
I think so.
Yeah,
I think so. And especially now that, you know, they're tied at the top of the table with Manchester City and they're actually playing well and there's this sense of belief, although I'm interested to see how this result deteriorates away from that, if at all.
But Joe Campbell getting some minutes now as well.
Yeah.
Good to see, finally. Yeah. 4 years. No, I think 2011.
2011,
Euro,
for sure.
In the Euro. Copa 2011 is when he kind of broke through for Costa Rica, right?
Yeah.
And he's playing. I wouldn't say he's playing well, but he's playing.
Yeah.
Add some pace up front, especially with Walcott out and Oxlade-Chamberlain out. They need some pace, right?
Ozil, too, I think has been
brilliant.
Fantastic.
9 assists so far this year in the Premier League.
Yeah, more than any other player in the top 5 leagues in Europe, apparently. So
I believe since arriving at Arsenal, no one's got more assists than him.
Probably. And he's linking up really well with Giroud. I read a stat about, I think, 4 of the last 6 goals that Giroud has scored, 4 have been set up by Ozil. So it's obviously something's working there.
But he is no Pedro Morales. That is for sure.
No, definitely
not. Who isn't playing much these days. But maybe he'll play this weekend when Vancouver take on Portland in Portland. 0-0 from the first leg. We're joined now by Paul Dolan. Doley, how's it going?
Good, fellas. How are you doing?
Doing good. Looking forward to what will be a fascinating tilt in Portland on Sunday. And listen, the League Award nominees are out, and the Vancouver Whitecaps look pretty good right now. Robbo's up for Manager of the Year. You have, obviously, David Alstead as Goalkeeper of the Year. You got Kendall Waston as Defender of the Year. All's looking rosy right now in Vancouver.
You know, when the Whitecaps sent out the press release, they might want to reword it, because the first 2 words in the headline were Robinson ousted.
Yeesh.
Ahead of the finals here? What are you doing? But, yeah, I mean, all 3 have every right to be there. In fact, Kendall Waston was named Player of the Year by the Whitecaps fans in a voting. But my pick and my colleagues' picks on the radio pre- and post-game we do here, and even some of the people in the media through the newspapers here, all picked David Ousted. And, you know, I thought maybe I was a little biased.
No, not you. What?
I think he proved his worth last weekend in Portland with that phenomenal free kick save from Diego Valeri. And he was the man of the match in that game. And I think he'll need to be again here on Sunday, because the Whitecaps haven't been scoring a lot of goals, as you know. And I think it's going to be another real tight affair, I do. I just wonder if the Whitecaps' nerves might get the best of them, just because they haven't had the best run of form lately. But, you know, I think true that Pedro Morales comes into this team, probably starts, and you saw in the last 10-15 minutes of the game in Portland what a change he can have in the whole face of the game and give them that offensive punch they just didn't have with Gershon Kofi in that role.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to ask you about, Paul, because, and through no fault of his own, I mean, Gershon Kofi, it's not his natural position, but I don't know, when Robbo deploys him in that sort of number 10 playmaking role, I don't think that really, I don't know, I don't think that suits Kofi's sort of natural talents.
No, and let me say this, I actually thought in the last 2 games in which he's played in that role that he's done quite well. I wouldn't say outstanding, but in some regards, I think Carl might have wanted to use him as a safe 7, 7.5.
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't mean like the position, but you know what you're going to get from him. He's not going to create a lot in the box. In fact, he had a very good chance to score in that game and kind of fluffed on it. Don't know if he was trying to pass or shoot there. But you knew you were going to get good enough work to maintain possession of the ball and maybe get your team further up the field and combine from there. Whereas maybe if you'd played Mauro Rosales, who was ready to play last week from the start, you might have got an 8, but you might have got a 6, and that might have been the difference between conceding a goal there or not. So they did what they needed to do in Portland. Although, again, for me, you know, a 0-0 draw favors the home team there, I think, you know, because Portland comes into Vancouver now, and any score draw, and of course a win, gives them the edge. So, you know, Whitecap fans are saying it's kind of a job half done, and is it a positive or a negative what they got out of Portland? I tend to think that, you know, they really wanted to get a goal there, and Gershon Kofi wasn't the guy that was going to provide you that, as we saw by his kind of missed opportunity there in the first half.
Well, and I think it's an interesting point you make, Paul, because I think on the face of it, people will look at it and say, well, like, they're going back home 0-0. They have to be pretty pleased with that. But I don't know. I raised the point after the game in a blog that I wrote, which was, you know, they were missing their starting goalkeeper, and Jack Gleason for Portland hadn't started. I don't think he even played in 3 years. And Vancouver didn't really test him all that much. So, I mean, it was a bit of a wasted opportunity, wasn't it?
And you also have to add to that the fact that Portland had played on the Thursday night, 120 minutes plus penalties. You think that there might have been more of an opportunity to get after them, as the Whitecaps had done really well down in Seattle which when you look at it in hindsight now is the last time that they scored away from home or won a game away from home. And since that slide where it's been, what, six games now or seven games where they've only got the one win, the one at home, yeah, I think that was an opportunity for them as well to kind of get after Portland, dictate the tempo, try to at least score, even if you risk the possibility that one might go in at the other end. A score draw would have been so much better to come home to. But Carl Robinson says he's happy. The players know that it's win and you're in, and you've got a home game to do that. So I guess you'd look at it as they would take that, obviously, and they have to take that now coming back from Portland with a chance to win it at home soil.
But this is the youngest team in MLS, I believe, or very close to it, a very young team, not that much experience. What is the club's whole mentality in these playoffs? Forget the players and the coaching stuff, we know that, but the top brass, are they saying this is a great way to gain experience? Watch out, we are building a dynasty here, potentially, or is it more like, no, we want results now, this team's good enough to go a long way?
Well, I think every team wants to win immediately. There's no question about that. The club has set certain targets that they've been able to achieve this year, and that the biggest one was hosting a home playoff game, and that's what they've got. And to have finished second, even better than top four is actually what they were aiming for, so that they would get a home playoff game in that home and away mix. But now they've got it, in the wild card to get in. But now they've got the home and away two-legged series where, they've got this second game at home, and if it's tied, they've got the extra 30 minutes again, of course. But I think that they've achieved that goal. But there is a view toward a long term, and you saw that kind of how they approached the Champions League, where they don't have necessarily the depth of a squad that they want just yet. They're giving a lot of those young players some minutes in those games so that they can, when it comes time to play in MLS playoff action, they're used to playing in those key games. So I think it's kind of both. I mean, every team in North America sports wants to win the cup, and they can do that with a quick run here and a good run. But there is more of a long-term vision, certainly, for this club overall.
Paul, do you get a sense that Pedro Morales is going to start on Sunday? I know he's, just recently kind of come back, and I think he played the final 15 minutes in the first leg. He's obviously had injury problems this year. Are you getting an idea from Robinson this week whether he'll start or even play?
I think he will. I do, and I think two things. One is the impact he had when he did come on. It was so much more noticeable how much more the Whitecaps were able to get passes moving forward, where for the majority of that game, a lot of the play was negative. I thought they were in pretty good control in the first half, and I thought they did a good job away from home, depending on how you want to look at the approach they should have taken in that game. They actually controlled it quite well, created a few chances as well. But in the second half, it was all Portland. And
right.
When Pedro Morales came on, and for that matter, when Mauro Rosales came on, they were both able to keep the team in more possession, get them forward more, and actually have some cutting balls go into the penalty box. Nothing that really created any chances, but I think from the start, Pedro Morales could really help this team, the confidence of the team. He's the captain of this team as well. And maybe he won't give you anything more than 60 or 70 minutes, but I think if he's healthy, and apparently he's been very good in training this week, pinging balls around and looking like he could go from the start, I think you've got to give him that.
Tactically, how do you think Vancouver approaches this second leg, Paul? I mean, do you see them going for it a little bit more, or will it just be a carbon copy of what they did in the first leg and then take whatever is given to them?
I think, John, we're going to see the carbon copy. Now, that's not the way I think, the neutral would like to see this thing play out, because we've seen some really wide-open attacking soccer across the MLS playoffs, and it's been a treat to the eye. Lots of goals, lots of fantastic goals. And it's really only this series that I can think of that has been this kind of close and close to the vest, I guess,
right.
If you're talking about both the coaches and their tactics. But, the Whitecaps, who earlier in the year were a bit more free-flowing and I think a bit more ambitious, let's say, or aggressive in terms of pressing from the front and also trying to attack a bit more, I think they're just going to be weighing up the balance between getting caught out by pushing too many men forward and making sure they're solid defensively. They're the best defensive team in the league with the goalkeeper, David Osted, and with Kendall Waston in front of him and Matias Laba in front of him. That spine has been so strong and solid for them. I think they'll rely on that and then use that counterattacking style of the players that they've got with pace, like a Kakuta Mane, and the ability of a Pedro Morales to find him perhaps in space and to chair on the right side. And you just think at some point, Octavio Rivero's got to come good. And yes, he works hard, and yes, he holds the ball up well, and he does all the grunt work, but he has to start scoring now, and he hasn't for a long time since the beginning of the season. He needs to come good now, and that's a huge question mark for them going into the game Sunday.
Well, and further to that, do you think he was a little bit isolated in the first leg?
He is, and the 4-2-3-1 sets up your center forward to be isolated, and that's why you find him out in the flanks so often in the channels, trying to track down balls that are played to him there. And he needs to get that support from Manny on the one side for sure, and, of course, from Teixeira on the other. And unfortunately, I thought Cucuta Manny had a poor game as well. You know, he gets those chances to get into space and get one-on-one with defenders, but he kind of, to use the old line, flubbed his lines. You know, when the ball came, he was either fighting it or a poor first touch or giving it away, and I didn't think he was all that good defensively either. So I had a question mark as to whether Manny would play. I know he's been a regular starter for the most part of the season, but he hasn't been as sharp as he should be the last few games, and maybe you see Darren Maddox, if not get a start, come on if things aren't going well for him.
I wonder if Robbo can still really believe how cheaply he got Labba for.
I don't think he can.
No.
Especially, and it rubs the salt in the wound even more for TFC fans.
Oh, yeah.
When you look at what they craved so much on that team, proper defensive holding midfielder.
We were just talking about that before you came on. Absolutely. He'd be the perfect fit. And he was right at BMO Field.
Yeah, and it's Labba for Gilberto, isn't it? Really, that's what it ended up being.
That's right. Rub it in some more there, Dolly. Thanks, pal. Really enjoyed this. Enjoy the game on Sunday, and we'll talk to you really soon.
Okay, looking forward to that. Take care, guys.
Cheers, Paul.
That is Sportsnet's Paul Dolan. You can follow Paul on Twitter at Dolly the Goalie. Yeah, it's about time that TFC stole a player from someone, eh? When was the last time they stole someone? Like a really good player. Oh, I can't believe they got him, you know, for so little. Has it ever happened?
Well, Justin Morrow.
Okay. I'll give you that. I like Morrow a lot. Yeah.
I can't remember what they get. I think it was just probably allocation money.
Yeah.
And he wanted out of San Jose. And I think he's been one of their most consistent players over the last 2 years. Marky Delgado, which they got from the...
Yes, the Chivas.
Yeah, for...
Dispersal draft.
I mean, the fact that they were able to get him because they were low in the draft, I thought that was an absolute steal. So
those are
two. There's nothing, I can't recall one on like the Labba level.
No, I mean, a game breaker. I mean,
right.
As far as a defensive midfield can be, a game breaker, a game breaker.
Oh, absolutely.
He's that good, yeah.
And he's exactly the type of player that they could use right now, but...
Well, maybe they can... send Altidore to Vancouver for Labba in the offseason. There you go.
That'd be an interesting switch.
You heard it here first.
Yeah.
Nothing to base that on whatsoever.
No, pure speculation.
Well, busy weekend across Sportsnet this coming few days. 9 o'clock on Saturday, Bayern Munich against Stuttgart in Sportsnet World. At 9:30, the Prem takes over on Sportsnet. It's Manchester United against West Brom and West Ham against Everton on Sportsnet 1. And it is Darmstadt against Hamburg on Sportsnet World in the late one at 12:15. And on Sunday, more German football. Great one for you here, actually. Schalke Dortmund.
Yeah, I'm getting
nice
up to watch that one.
10:30 is Liverpool against Crystal Palace. And at 11:30 is Augsburg Werder Bremen on Sportsnet World. Check out sportsnet.ca for all your listings for what will be a very busy few days across Sportsnet in the footballing sphere.
Yes.
Anything of note to get to on the website?
Just all the preview coverage for the Premier League and the Bundesliga. And we'll have a lot of preview coverage of the MLS playoffs starting tomorrow with some stories on the Vancouver Whitecaps and the Montreal Impact, obviously. So a lot of good stuff.
All right, Dobby and Dunlop are back on Monday. I will not be around this Monday, but I'll see you, I guess. So I guess we're off next Thursday too because it's right.
Why?
You're a qualifying.
Oh, right. Forgot
Remember?
About that. Okay.
Again, it's back already, right. But it's the playoffs.
Right.
Right.
We're in with Sportsnet is showing all the playoffs, both first and second legs. So,
that's right.
There you go.
Right. All right. Enjoy it, people. Thanks to Paul Dolan and Stu Cowan for all things MLS. Cheers for listening.